2018 marks the 70th anniversary of the rebirth of Israel as a nation. What a miracle in history. We're going to talk right now with Susan Michael, who is the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, and she's actually based here in the United States. Susan Michael, great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, Jerry, thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Okay, this is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and let's talk about Israel in terms of even as a nation to be reborn the way it was in 1948 took quite a miracle, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's their story is full of miracles and many prophecies that have been fulfilled in their rebirth. And it's when you look at the history of the Jewish people and you look at the history of their exile for 1900 years, their return to their ancient homeland in the modern days, it is nothing less than a miracle. It's a very exciting story.
Let me ask you a question. Obviously, a lot of people today, especially even young people and so forth, are saying, oh, they just stole the land from the Palestinians. You know, sometimes I've even heard the word apartheid.
Oh, I know. And it's the farthest thing from the truth. Apartheid state, of course, it was a terrible regime in South Africa based on the separation of the races. It was actually a part of law. It was very discriminatory towards the majority of the country, which were the blacks. So because the West was able to protest against that and brought down that regime, Israel's enemies have tried to use the same word against her so that they can also call for her to be not just sanctioned, but actually dismantled. So it's nothing but a PR ploy. If you go to Israel, especially go to a hospital or a doctor's office, you will see Arab and Jewish doctors working side by side, nurses, patients. You don't know one from the other. They're all equal citizens of the state. They go to the same universities. They go to the same shopping centers. They use the same buses. And so this apartheid claim is just absolutely not true. The other one that you mentioned is that they stole the land from the Palestinians. That also is not true. Israel was founded with the approval of the international bodies such as the League of Nations at the time, the British, which had the area under mandate, and a lot of the public lands that had been previously under the Ottoman Empire, which the British now had under mandate, were then passed on to the State of Israel. And then there were private lands that the Jews bought at exorbitant prices, I might mention, for swamp lands, desert lands. They paid a very high price for it. And of course, Jerry, there are some examples of people that lost their homes in the war and were not able to come back to claim them. And there's always injustices in war, but the claim that the whole country is just built on Palestinian land is not true.
One thing I don't understand, speaking of that, okay, the people who lost out in the war, 1948, and then other wars as well, and they ended up in Palestinian refugee camps. Normally, a refugee camp situation is a temporary situation until somebody can be plugged into, you know, a new life elsewhere. But it seems as if the Palestinian refugee camps have been allowed to continue for decades. You know, and you just wonder, wow, was this kind of a money-making machine for the PLO? I know the other side would probably, you know, tear out their hair to hear me say something like that, but what are your thoughts?
No, it's a very simple explanation. The United Nations Agency for Resettling Refugees is called the UNHCR, and their goal is to resettle refugees. They work with about 30 countries around the world that take in refugees, a quota each year, but they take them in. But for the Palestinians, they created their own agency called UNRWA. And the goals of UNRWA are not resettlement, but to care for the refugees. So there was never a plan put in place all these years to resettle them. Secondly, UNRWA gave them the false hope that one day they may return. And so they have lived under false pretenses of possible return to their homes instead of being settled and being taken care of. And UNRWA is a huge agency. It takes hundreds of millions of dollars. It has like 30,000 staff members. They all lose their jobs if this agency is done away with. So they do everything they can to keep it in place, but they have used and abused the Palestinian refugees in a terrible way.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I know somebody from a very liberal country where that in that country, you know, they've given tons of money to the Palestinians. And after a while, this lady was saying to my wife, she was saying, you know, I don't get this here. And this was back when Yasser Arafat was alive. But Yasser Arafat's raising all this money to help these refugees. Meanwhile, his wife is going off to Paris on these shopping, you know, trips and spending, I don't know, millions or whatever. And it's like, this is ungodly.
Yes, well, you know, Jerry, as Christians, we really should be very concerned for the well-being of the Palestinian people. And but the truth of the matter is that it's not Israel's fault the injustice is against them. It's the fault of their own corrupt leadership that have put money in their own bank accounts instead of taking care of their people. And it's the fault of the United Nations system that has kept them in refugee camps. You know, today there are only about 20,000 refugees actually left that were alive in 1948 when they lost their homes. But UNRWA says there's over 5 million. So they have made their children and their grandchildren a refugee, keeping them in these camps. It's inhumane, and we should not allow it to continue.
Where are these camps? In Lebanon? Where?
Partly? Oh, they're Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and in the Palestinian territories, in the West Bank and in Gaza. Now tell me, why would there be Palestinian refugee camps in a Palestinian-controlled territory? It just makes no sense. They're not absorbing them into their own society.
So it is kind of a fundraising mechanism, an ongoing fundraising mechanism, essentially. You can show these pictures.
It's a political hammer that they use to beat up on Israel with.
Wow. All right, now here's another question. There's so many Arab lands that surround Israel. In fact, I once heard somebody make this point. They said if you took a matchbox, just a small little matchbox, and walked into about to the middle of a football field and put that matchbox down in the middle of that football field, that matchbox would represent the amount of territory and land Israel owns as a nation, and then that entire football field surrounding the matchbox would represent all of the Arab lands surrounding Israel. There's so many of them. Why can't they absorb, you know, these Palestinian refugees into these other Arab lands? Are they not welcome to come in and resettle in their countries?
No, at the end of the day, those Arab countries and the Arab leaders do not care about the Palestinian people, and they don't want to absorb them. They would rather use them, as I said, as a political hammer to beat up on Israel.
Okay, now recently there was a CNN commentator, and they have a lot of commentators, I think 30 or 40 of them, something like that, but he lost his job. He said, and it was surprising that he would say this, but he said that, look, ultimately, you know, we need to drive the Israelis from the river to the sea. That would mean from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, drive them from there to there. Wait a minute, where would the Israelis be at the end of the day? In other words, he was basically saying Israel should be wiped out, and CNN did fire that guy. I'm sure you're familiar with that story.
Yes, but it's terrible. I mean, he was calling for Israel to be, as I said, dismantled or just done away with, and it's nothing but an anti-Semitic ploy to destroy Israel. Why can't they have that little piece of land?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, very true. Okay, now, comment about the fact that You know, maybe 5-10 years ago, we would always hear about, oh, there was a Sbarro's pizza place blown up by a Palestinian, you know, bomber, and all, you know, X number of Israelis were killed. And we used to hear about that all the time. And then they got serious and they built some sort of wall. Tell us about that. Maybe there's a lesson for the United States here.
Yes, there definitely is. Yeah, it was a terrible season in the early round 2000, 2001. It was called the Second Intifada. And there were suicide bombers getting on buses in downtown Jerusalem and blowing themselves up just to kill anyone, children, women, old people. It was a very traumatic time. And so the prime minister at the time, who was Ariel Sharon, started the construction of a wall that would divide between Israel and what is known as the West Bank. And it was very controversial. And so Israel's enemies call that wall the apartheid wall, and they try to say that it's about racism, that the Jews are building this wall because of racism. But racism has nothing to do with it. As soon as they got the wall complete, all of those bombings stopped because the terrorists could no longer cross over from the Palestinian territories in the West Bank into Israel proper. So it saved untold number of lives on both sides, both the bombers and of the Israeli citizens.
Okay, there is a campaign by some liberals in America to disinvest in Israel. I've even heard about some liberal denominations that profess to be Christians where they're a part of that disinvestment campaign. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, it's just another attempt to blame the Jewish people or the Israeli people for all of the problems of the Palestinians, for the fact that they have factories and they have companies that are built inside the West Bank, the Israelis do. And it's nothing, but it's just a part of an overall campaign which is at the heart, is anti-Semitic, Jerry, because it says, let's blame Israel for everything. Let's not have anything to do with them. You know, no business with companies that do business with Israel, as though that they are some evil people, some really terrible entity. When if you go there and you meet the people, you learn the history of how the state was created. You realize that none of that is true. And so our churches, some of our churches, are just being fed lies and propaganda, and it really is very disturbing.
All right, we have about a minute left to go. How about a summary of the story of the original Hanukkah and how that's inspiring to all of us, including Christians?
Well, I wish we had more time to talk about that, because I love to draw the connection between Hanukkah and Christians and Christmas, that Christmas may have never even happened had there not been a Hanukkah. And that was when the Jewish people retook their temple and rededicated it to the God of Israel. 150 years later, then we had a priest named Zechariah serving in the temple. And that's the beginning of the Christmas story. So we can be very thankful for the Hanukkah story. And there's no reason why Christians shouldn't celebrate it alongside the Jewish people.
Didn't Jesus celebrate Hanukkah?
He did. He went to the temple for what was called the Feast of Dedication, which is Hanukkah. The word Hanukkah comes from the word to dedicate.
Do you know offhand what chapter that would be found in the Gospels?
That is found in, I believe, John chapter 10.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us. Susan Michael, U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, or Embassy Jerusalem, and the website is icejusa.org. Thank you, Susan. God bless you and all the best.
Thank you.